And the way forests used to be inventorized, looked at, being kept track of, used to be a 5 to 10 years cycle of visiting the forest and taking samples. And if you then basically are working with 5 year cycles that are based on human inspection, you have a fairly significant margin of error. We sort of sat around a table in Munich years ago and we were sort of debating things and why don't we combine climate data and climate intelligence with business processes? Started to understand this forestry market, realized there's a lot of data there, which is fantastic for machine learning. And there not a lot of is being done with that data.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands that are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we talk with Rolf Schmitz, co-CEO of Collective Crunch, AI leader in forestry. He joins us from Bavaria, Germany. Welcome, Rolf.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, Vidya.
With all this talk in the news about climate change, its impacts, steps to reduce global warming, you know, reduce the temperature by 1.5%, forests form a major part of that solution. What percent of our planet is covered with forests?
Very substantial part. About 30% are covered by forests. It's a substantial part of the globe and of the climate ecosystem. So indeed, it's a big.
So what would you define a forest? Like, is it the density or is it the expanse or the...
There's actually quite a bit of science around that. There's agroforest where you have sort of a mix of agricultural plants and forests themselves. But generally, it's sort of, you know, from a certain density of trees, it pretty much, you know, when you see it from a density of trees, that scientifically becomes a forest. But actually quite a bit of work we do is also about sort of where forest has been lost. So you're basically talking about areas that aren't forested and you want to reforest them and elements like that.
Talk about how we've lost, like what has been the pattern? Some of the forests are lost naturally because of the fires, which have to happen every so many years because of the brush. How have our forests changed?
Very significantly so. You see in the Western world, actually not a lot of really natural, you know, many generations of growth kind of forests. A lot of what you see is it's considered natural. It might even be domestic species, but quite a fair share of it has been at some stage cut by earlier generations and replanted. So for example, in the US, there's only parts of the federal land that is still sort of really old forest, which actually goes back hundreds of years, got a lot of undergrowth, which is actually in some quarters seen as one of the highest risk fire areas in the country. What we see sort of basically sort of a sliding scale, there's sort of, you know, the Amazon, which, you know, hopefully we'll manage to protect over the next generations, which is really sort of, you know, natural and rainforest. And then there's different parts of the world. But let's say in Finland, which is sort of our core business and where we originate from, in many areas, the forest is a bit seen like a field. It's taken out at some stage, it's replanted. There's a rethinking there of not doing clear cuts because they have some impact. You know, you have a stand, a smaller area, and if you take out everything, it has a certain impact on the ecosystem. So basically, the processes are in some areas changing towards just taking out a few trees. It's kind of a big question in a way. There's lots happening, but overall, there's sort of a lot of awareness that we need to be mindful about how we're treating forests. And there's also a fairly strong case for sustainable forestry that has commercial applications because resources coming out of forests are replacing plastics in packaging and things like that. So we're kind of basically addressing all of these different fairly complex aspects.
So you talked about reforesting, and in a country like Finland with ample resources, very small population, pressure on the land and its resources is limited. But how do we influence countries which are still growing, need to build homes, need to build furniture with a burgeoning middle class? How do you get them on board to first not cut anymore, or at least cut sustainably, and to reforest?
Cut sustainably is a watchword here, and there's lots of efforts going in that direction. for example, one market that I've been having some exposure to is Vietnam. And one of the things that in some of these countries, basically the governments are trying to do is to move from a very low value added forestry, which basically is, you know, you grow the trees a couple of years, you cut them, you shred them, and they become really like a very low value added kind of input into a process, pulp mostly. Rather than doing that, that you move to a forestry that is growing the trees more, longer cycles, you move to higher value added, kind of more manufacturing, deeper value added kind of processes. This pulp is a fairly generic process. And the way you sort of extend the life cycles and you aim your forestry at sort of longer life cycles of product, you tend to generate a bit more employment. And there's quite a few things there that are sort of deeply into economics that are being attempted on the side of sustainable forestry. You plant it, at some stage you cut it. You basically try to minimize the impact on the environment while maximizing the economic impact, the impact of sustainable employment, basically giving at least from a forestry perspective, contributing to sustainable growth of an economy. So those are some of the things in this field that are being done.
We all know about carbon credits. When I purchase a carbon credit for a flight from New York to Chicago, I basically pay a farmer in probably the Amazon to not cut that tree, and we are giving him an alternate source of livelihood. Is that accurate?
In its intentions, it's accurate. There's a bit of a problem about the quality of climate credits. You know, there's the whole sort of, you know, topic of greenwashing. And there's been a fairly consistent, over many years now, problem with credits being coming from projects basically not credible, that are not doing what they're saying they're doing. When you look at what corporations do in the US, Europe, and so forth, they are trying to not just buy public on a carbon market, but really invest in a project with a trusted partner to make sure that the credits that they get are actually of high quality, that they have the integrity of basically holding water if checked by a journalist. And, you know, we've all been on YouTube and seen some of these sort of more infamous projects, and that's sort of an issue there. But in principle, you are trying to offset carbon footprint that you leave behind, and that you hope basically by acquiring a carbon credit that you offset that activity.
Also, besides greenwashing, sometimes these credits are sold twice. How do I know that I, as a person selling the carbon credits or being the trader of carbon credits, I am not selling it to you and to the person next to you?
There's quite a bit of standards going on. There's VERA, sometimes called VCS, is a standard organization that basically builds a registry and works in a certification process, checking projects when they're being set up. And there's gold standard, there's some American specific standards. So there is sort of quite a bit of framework around that. And actually a lot of that work that's being done there is, in my opinion, very, very good and well-intentioned and scientifically sound work. There is the odd, you know, debate around, you know, that standard has failed, and kind of it gets you sort of good press in the sense of a lot of attention. And there are people who are basically saying that these standards are no good because they create so many problems. In my opinion, they're good standards. They're going into the right direction. The issue is much more, we talk about a very complex thing. You know, we're talking about forests in the southern hemisphere. We're talking about remote areas. It's just hard to track these things. And it's only in the last couple of years, which is sort of the contribution that we make, that technology can help to better track forests. And that increases the transparency to such trades.
So we